stay, baby.
Don't get in no trouble.
Nah, we're just trying to win this dance
club. You're staying alive on 101.9 with Marco on Astronaut.
We got the Refugees All Stars, Rubber Devin in the club, Y Clef Jean.
Shorty got back. Should I ask her for a dance? Hold on, there's too many in the wolf pack. And besides, dirty cash talking to her. Buying her fake furs and taking her to the fever.
Welcome, you're listening to CITR 101.9. It's Thursday, it's 3 o'clock, and it's time for another one-half hour of astronomy talk with your host, Marco, on CITR's Astro Talk.
Ouija's, check the spelling, R-E-F-U-G-E. E, get the CD from Sam Goody. You ain't even close with the rhymes that you wrote. Don't be mad because you broke. Let me clear my throat.
You're listening to Astro Talk with Marco on CITR 101.9 FM.
Me, I'm eating mangoes in Trinidad with attorneys. Yeah. My food slang flow worldwide like a current. Went to every spot where nobody got insurance. Rubber do the math, you ain't half the exotic. My man's claim true, you forget about it. Ho-ho, just a new sense, like my influence. Well recognized, you a lie trying to do it. Got you, told your lady, oops, we nuts, baby. Smooth and charismatic, automatic, you gon' save me. God bless the dead as my son survived. We strive to teach you, baby, and stay alive.
Hi, we're out. Good afternoon. This is Marco on Astro Talk on CITR 101.9. It's summer, and this means there's things coming every year. Something's coming that comes every year, and that's on August 11th. It's the peaking of the Perseids meteor shower. So if you look up, you can probably see some meteors. You're going to have to lie in the ground and just stare up and maybe go to a darker part of the city. On Monday, August 15th, there's a spacewalk preview briefing. NASA at 2 p.m. on NASA TV will talk about the upcoming spacewalk. And on Friday, August 19th, astronauts Jeff Williams and Kate Rubins are going to do a spacewalk. So that sounds like fun. So there's lots on the menu for NASA and just for astronomy in general. The skies, if they clear up, we'll be able to see some things. So anyway, the past few weeks, I was talking about moons on the solar system, and there's some very interesting news today, Tuesday, August 2nd, about new research reveals fluctuating atmosphere of Jupiter's volcanic moon. So as we know, there's a moon in Jupiter, it's called Io. There's hundreds of volcanoes that are sprouting there all and spewing all the time. It's because Io is very close to Jupiter, and on its orbits around Jupiter, there are times when it lines up with other moons. So these moons tug on the surface of Io, just like a paperclip will be bent. You'll have friction. If you bend a paperclip back and forth, you can feel the heat. This is what happens in Io's surface. It bends back and forth. It gets pulled. It gets stretched. So it gets hot, and Io is the hottest place in our solar system. When the Voyager spacecraft went into Jupiter in 1977 in Jupiter's orbit, and they passed through Jupiter, they noticed the volcanoes the first time they had noticed them before. So Io is the most volcanic place in our solar system, and its surface can resemble, let's say, a pepperoni pizza with orange, green, yellow, and burnt spots all over the place. So Jupiter's volcanic moon Io has a thin atmosphere that collapses in the shadow of Jupiter. This is from the article on NASA.gov. The title of the article is "New Research Reveals Fluctuating Atmosphere of Jupiter's Volcanic Moon." So we always knew it had a fluctuating surface. It would move up and down, but now the atmosphere seems to fluctuate. This article is dated August 2nd, 2016. The study reveals the freezing effects of Jupiter's shadow during daily eclipses on the moon's volcanic gases. So even though it's hot, it's in the shadow of Jupiter, so I guess this affects the moon. So says Constantine Tsang, a scientist at the Southwest Research Institute in Boulder, Colorado. This research is the first time scientists have observed this remarkable phenomenon directly, improving our understanding of this geologically active moon. I think that's supposed to be geologically. There we go. Io is the most volcanically active object in the solar system. The volcanoes are caused by tidal heating, the result of gravitational forces or gravitational tugs from Jupiter and other moons. These forces result in geological activity, most notably volcanoes that emit umbrella-like plumes of sulfur dioxide gas that can extend up to 300 miles above Io and produce extensive basaltic lava fields that can flow for hundreds of miles. So it's a very interesting place. The new study documents atmospheric changes on Io as a giant planet casts its shadow over the moon's surface during daily eclipses. Io's thin atmosphere, which consists primarily of sulfur dioxide, SO2, gas emitted from volcanoes, collapses as SO2 freezes onto the surface as ice when Io is shaded by Jupiter, then is restored when the warm ice sublimes and transforms from solid back to gas when the moon moves out of eclipse back in the sunlight. So not only is Io affected by the gravitational tugs of Jupiter and the other moons, but its atmosphere is affected as well. So remember when, I think it goes this way, when as Io revolves around Jupiter, it can revolve around 8 times. The next moon that revolves around Jupiter, goes around Jupiter, does 4 orbits every time Io makes 8 orbits. The next moon does 2 orbits every time Io does 8 orbits. And the next farther moon out, I'm sorry, I don't have their names. I could name their names, but I probably wouldn't name them in the correct order. And the next moon, as it goes around once, Io has gone around 8 times. So there's lots of times when the moons line up. That's called a resonance, an orbital resonance. So they pull on the surface of Io, but Jupiter pulls a lot harder. And since Jupiter is such a big planet, the biggest planet in the solar system, I think it's 109 Earths could fit into Jupiter. The planet shades Io at some times. So Io sometimes hides in Jupiter's shade. Even though at that distance, Jupiter, I believe, receives 4% of the sunlight from the sun that Earth does. So Io is an interesting place. It has volcanoes. It's the hottest place in the solar system. I guess if we went there right now, we looked, we could see maybe 100 volcanoes, maybe more, at one time spewing out their lava. And some of this sulfur dioxide or this ash goes out and it forms a ring, a torus, around Jupiter. So Io replenishes this torus all the time. This torus of gas is like a round, big, thick thing of grass, a big rope of gas around Jupiter. So Io replenishes it. So it's a very interesting world. Here we have all these planets with orbital resonances. So they are orbiting Jupiter and they line up very often. And these are big moons, or sorry, not planets, moons. So we have moons going around Jupiter. They line up and there's interesting effects. So the atmosphere of Io collapses as the moon goes behind the shadow of Jupiter. So it collapses as SO2 freezes onto the surface as ice when Io is shaded by Jupiter. Then the gases are restored when the ice warms and sublimes, i.e. transfers from solid back to gas, not from solid to liquid and gas, but solid to gas, when the moon moves out of eclipse back in the sunlight. The study used the large 8-meter Gemini North Telescope in Hawaii and an instrument called the Texas Echelon Cross Echel Spectrograph. So it's Texas, T-E-X-E-X. Wow, that's pretty clever. It's from the state of Texas, and they named the instrument Texas. So T-E-X-E-S, and the state is T-E-X-A-S. So that's called the Texas Echelon Cross Echel Spectrograph. So a spectrograph, again, measures wavelengths of light, and from that wavelength of light, they can tell what kind of atmosphere there is. As I mentioned before, in each atom, for example, hydrogen, atoms often jump up and down in between what are called energy levels, which we used to think atoms were like a planetary. They had the planetary model where electrons rotated around atoms, but they don't. They jump up and down between energy levels. And when they emit or absorb certain wavelengths of light that are characteristic of that atom, then scientists can tell what that gas is. So data showed that Io's atmosphere begins to deflate when the temperature drops from minus 235 degrees Fahrenheit in sunlight to minus 270 degrees Fahrenheit during when the moon Io is behind Jupiter. So they call this eclipse. So imagine going from minus 235 degrees to minus 270 degrees Fahrenheit in the period of one day. That's cold to start with. So I don't think we'd like that. Eclipse occurs 2 hours every day. Eclipse occurs 2 hours of every Io day, 1.7 Earth days. In full eclipse, the atmosphere effectively collapses as most of the sulfur dioxide gas settles as frost on the moon's surface. The atmosphere redevelops as the surface warms once the moon returns to full sunlight. So says John Spencer, a co-author of the new study, who is also from the Southwest Research Institute in Boulder, Colorado. And quote, "This confirms that Io's atmosphere is in a constant state of collapse and repair and shows that a large fraction of the atmosphere is supported by sublimation of SO2 ice. Though Io's hyperactive volcanoes are the ultimate source of the CO2, sunlight controls the atmospheric pressure on a daily basis by controlling the temperature of the ice on the surface. We've long suspected this, but can finally watch it happen. Prior to the study, no direct observations of Io's atmosphere in eclipse have been possible because Io's atmosphere is difficult to observe in the darkness of Jupiter's shadow." So I believe Io is, I think, for sure, the closest of the four big moons. They're called the Galilean moons, but it's probably the closest moon to Jupiter. So because it's so close, Jupiter can tug on it and exert a very strong gravitational influence on Io. This breakthrough was made possible because TEXEX, T-E-X-E-X, which I'll repeat again, is the TEXEX Echelon Cross Echel Spectrograph, or TEXEX, T-E-X-E-X. This breakthrough was possible because TEXEX measures the atmosphere using heat radiation, not sunlight, and the giant Gemini telescope, which I believe is in Hawaii, can sense the faint heat signature of Io's collapsing atmosphere. The observations occurred over two nights in November 2013, when Io was more than 420 million miles, or 675 million kilometers from Earth. Io was observed moving into Jupiter's shadow for a period of about 40 minutes before and after the start of the eclipse. So that's an interesting story about Io. Now let's look at Juno, the spacecraft that is now in orbit around Jupiter. It started its orbit, I believe, on July 4th, so it took quite a few years to get there. I believe the orbit is on a giant ellipse, and it is now further out from the planet, and it will slowly come back in. They are now, I believe, NASA is calibrating its instrument, doing some research, but it isn't until October that the full research will get underway. So here's another article about Juno that's dated July 29th. So I believe this was last Friday, only 6 days ago. So this is called 5 years post-launch. Juno is at a turning point. This is, again, dated July 29th, 2016, on NASA's website, www.nasa.gov. I'm going to start with the article now. 5 years after departing Earth and a month after slipping into orbit around Jupiter, NASA's Juno spacecraft is nearing a turning point. On July 1st at 12:41 p.m., Pacific Daylight Time. So again, they do it Pacific Daylight Time because it's monitored from the west coast of California at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory at the California Institute of Technology, which now is the rated the best university in the world. Juno will reach the farthest point in its orbit of Jupiter for the first time, known as Apogeu, 5 million miles from the giant planet. So that was on July 31st, which was on Sunday. So that was 4 days ago. After that point, Jupiter's gravitational grip on Juno will cause the spacecraft to begin falling back towards the planet for another pass, this time with its scientific eyes wide open. The spacecraft is currently executing the first of two long orbits prior to beginning its science mission. Each capture orbit is nearly 2 months long, quite the wait for the mission's eager team of scientists, but it's nothing compared to the long wait the team endured on the trek to Jupiter. Juno launched on August 5th, 2011, so almost 5 years ago. The spacecraft took a long looping path around the inner solar system to set up an Earth flyby in which our planet's gravity flung the spinning probe onward toward Jupiter. So it came close to our Earth, and in that way, it robs the Earth of some of its gravitational momentum. But in comparison, so the Earth would lose a little bit of gravitational momentum. But because Earth is so big and the spacecraft is so small, it's negligible the amount of momentum it loses. So says Scott Bolton, the Juno principal investigator at the Southwest Research Institute in San Antonio, and quote, "For 5 years, we've been focusing on getting to Jupiter. Now we're there, and we're concentrating on beginning dozens of flybys of Jupiter to get the science we're after." Now, wouldn't that be cool if we had a person on board there? Yes, it would. There's a diagram in the article, and it says the diagram shows the Juno spacecraft orbits, including its two long stretch-out capture orbits. The spacecraft position on July 31st is indicated at left, and that is when it will be the furthest away from the planet, called Apogeu, or Apogeu. Juno arrived at Jupiter on July 4th, firing its main rocket engine as planned for 35 minutes. The flawless maneuver allowed Jupiter's gravity to capture the solar-powered spacecraft into the first of two 53.4-day-long orbits, referred to as capture orbits. Following the capture orbits, Juno will fire its engine once more to shorten its orbital period to 14 days and begin its science mission, so sometime in October. But before that happens, on August 27th, Juno must finish its first lap around Jupiter with a finish line that represents the mission's closest pass over the gas giant. During the encounter, Juno will skim past Jupiter at a mere 2,600 miles above the cloud tops. But before, Juno's science instruments were turned off during orbit insertion to simplify spacecraft operations during that critical maneuver. Oh, so they were simplifying their orbit insertion, so they couldn't do any science because all the instruments were turned off. In contrast, all the instruments will be collecting data during the August 27 passby, which serves as a trial run before the mission gets to work collecting the precious data it came for. So says Rick Nybakken, the Juno project manager at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, California, and quote, "We're in an excellent state of health with the spacecraft and all the instruments fully checked out and ready for our first close-up look at Jupiter. With its powerful suite of science instruments, Juno will probe Jupiter's deep structure, atmospheric circulation, and the high-energy physics of its magnetic environment. What Juno finds there will reveal important clues to Jupiter's formation and evolution, along with insights about how our planetary systems and others are built." So I believe what happens below Jupiter's surface, it's hard to say what its surface is because it's a gas giant, so it's made of gas. It doesn't have a solid surface like Earth. but somewhere underneath its surface, it has liquid hydrogen. The ions of liquid hydrogen move around the inside, and these moving charges creates the giant magnetic field or magnetosphere that surrounds the planet Jupiter. With its powerful, JPL manages the Juno mission for the principal investigator, Scott Bolton of Southwest Research Institute in San Antonio. Juno is part of NASA's New Frontiers program, which is managed at NASA's Marshall Space Flight Center in Huntsville, Alabama. It's very strange. A New Frontiers program, but I thought the spacecraft that went by Pluto last year was called the New Frontiers. Well, we'll see. Anyway, so I'm going to go for a break now. When I come back, we're going to talk more science. And hopefully we can hear more about the spacecraft that are now in the solar system. This is Marco. You're listening to Astro Talk on 101.9.
Well-known pimp, narcotics king, big-time racketeer, back in full force.
This could be one of the big moments in your life. Don't make it your last.
Look, this thing might be bigger than even we think it is.
Do you need an upgrade to the soundtrack to your life? Perhaps a song from a film or a tune from TV? My name is Gap. Exploding Head Movies is here to give you sounds from the cinema, along with the songs that will be defining your future, and those forgotten classics that need a little rescue.
Yeah. Come on, baby. Come on. I won't let you down. Follow me.
Exploding Head Movies, Monday, 7 to 9 p.m. on CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver.
Just a young boy living in the hub city.
Eastside Cottage.
Back in the days when Ice Cube and Easy had every talking about, boy, you can't.
This is Marco. You're listening to Astro Talk on CITR 101.9 on the west side at UBC.
Too short, bumped in every super boat and told us all how to ride for the west coast.
My people, you know me where you at, throw your gloves in the air and wave them like you just don't care. From LA to the Bay, what you say? All day, every day, any damn day. Take a look around, we got the whole world locked down. No, don't stop, won't stop.
That's why I put it down for the west side.
Didn't seem that long ago.
Oh, no.
We were still in 40s out the liquor store.
Oh, no.
Mama started tripping, so it's time to go.
Out to the park with the locusts.
Everybody broke smoking roaches.
DJ Quick West the had every claiming he was from the CPT.
Y'all remember?
One time tried to clown.
We had to burn this bitch on down. One time for my was in incarceration.
Place a dime with you for having lots of patience.
From my sisters at the county built.
I got some Westside love for all you ghetto children.
Three times from my that been passed away.
I take some jewel for you and pray for better days.
One day everything's gonna be fine. But until that day, my only reply is
Westside till I
my
die.
Where you at? Throw your gloves in the air.
Like you just don't care.
From LA to the Bay, what you say? All day, every day,
any damn day.
Take a look around.
Let's do some quick yes or no questions. Are the following things technically possible? Life on other planets, is that theoretically possible?
Yes.
Okay. What about a Schwarzschild wormhole?
Yes.
Okay, what about this? Me going on a date with Charlize Theron? Not at all. In no universe.
No.
In none of the infinite universes does that happen.
No.
It's completely beyond the bounds of scientific possibility, is what you're saying?
Yes.
Quick follow-up question. In any of those potential universes, am I the one rejecting her, and that's why it doesn't work out?
No. You do realize that typing your response is difficult for me, correct?
Okay, sure, yeah. It's just I'm trying to play this out because I'm just trying to see if there was any hypothetical hope.
No.
It doesn't matter. But never say never. Okay, if time travel were possible, would you want to go back in time and refuse to do this interview?
Yes.
You truly are an incredibly smart man. Stephen Hawking, thank you.
Welcome back. This is Marco and Astro Talk. So let's keep talking about Jupiter. I wanted to talk a little bit about Titan. I've been looking at Titan because it has this amazing atmosphere that's so interesting. But let's look at another story that just came out last week about Jupiter. And since the Juno spacecraft is in orbit around Jupiter, why not start talking about that big planet in the sky? So everybody knows there's a giant red spot on Jupiter that is many times the size of the Earth. So what is this red dot? What is this giant red spot? So to talk about this, I'm looking at an article dated July 27th, 2016. From www.nasa.gov. And the title of the article is Jupiter's Great Red Spot, Likely a Massive Heat Source. There's a picture in the article starts. It's an artist's conception of the heating mechanisms from Jupiter's Great Red Spot. So I'm going to start with the article now. New NASA-funded research suggests that Jupiter's Great Red Spot may be the mysterious heat source behind Jupiter's surprisingly high upper atmospheric temperatures. Here on Earth, sunlight heats the atmosphere at altitudes well above the surface. For example, at 250 miles above our planet, where the International Space Station orbits, scientists have been stumped as to why temperatures in Jupiter's upper atmosphere are comparable to those found on Earth, yet Jupiter is more than five times the distance from the Sun. They wanted to know, if the Sun isn't the heat source, then what is this heat source? Researchers from Boston University's Centers for Space Physics set out to solve the mystery by mapping temperatures well above Jupiter's cloud tops using observations from Earth. They analyzed data from the SPX spectrometer, at NASA's Infrared Telescope Facility, IRTF, on Mauna Kea, Hawaii, a 3-meter infrared telescope operated for NASA by the University of Hawaii. Well, for any of you youngsters that are choosing for a career, looking for a career, just these acronyms from NASA, that could be interesting enough to choose astronomy. Aren't these interesting, these acronyms? By observing non-visible infrared light hundreds of miles above the gas giant, which is Jupiter, scientists found temperatures to be much higher in certain latitudes and longitudes in Jupiter's southern hemisphere, where the spot is located. And so says Boston University's James O'Donoghue, the lead author of the study, and quote, "We could see almost immediately that our maximum temperatures at high altitudes were above the great spot, red spot far below. A weird coincidence or a major clue?" The study in the June 27 issue of the journal Nature concludes that the storm in the Great Red Spot produces two kinds of turbulent energy waves that collide and heat the upper atmosphere. Gravity waves are much like how a guitar string moves when plucked, while acoustic waves are compressions of the air or sound waves. So acoustic wave is a sound wave. Heating in the upper atmosphere 500 miles or 800 kilometers above the Great Red Spot is thought to be caused by a combination of these two types of waves crashing, like ocean waves on a beach. So says O'Donoghue again, and quote, "The extremely high temperatures observed above the storm appear to be the smoking gun of these energy transfers." So something's transferring energy from the Red Spot to the upper atmosphere. This tells us that planet-wide heating is a plausible explanation for the energy crisis. a problem in which upper atmospheric temperatures are measured hundreds of degrees hotter than can be explained by sunlight alone. This effect has been observed over the Andes Mountains here on Earth and may also be happening elsewhere in the outer solar system, though it has not been directly observed. Scientists believe this phenomenon also occurs on gas giant exoplanets orbiting other stars. The Great Red Spot, or GRS, has delighted and mystified since its discovery in the 17th century. With its swirl of reddish hues, it is 2 to 3 times as wide as Earth and is seen by many as a perpetual hurricane with winds peaking at about 400 miles per hour. NASA's Juno spacecraft, which recently arrived at Jupiter, will have several opportunities during its 20-month mission to observe the Great Red Spot and the turbulent region surrounding it. So that's good. The Juno spacecraft, which we talked about earlier, is going to observe this Great Red Spot. And one of the greatest things about NASA, as I've mentioned before, is let's take as a first example the Voyager spacecraft. I believe their lifespan was originally put at 5 years, so they were going to operate 5 years. So from 1977, they were going to end their mission in 1982. So now it's 2016, and they're both still going. They have one of them, Voyager 1, has reached interstellar space, and Voyager 2 will soon reach interstellar space. So the great thing about NASA is that it's somehow always finds funding to extend these missions. So it's possible after its 20-month mission, who knows, Juno may also be extended. Unlike the MOST telescope, it was nice that our Canadian government put it into orbit, but when its mission came to an end, they shut it down. Not like NASA, which has so many spacecraft, so many missions, and they just keep extending them. So wouldn't that be great if the Canadian government could do that too? Juno will appear, getting back to the story, Juno will appear hundreds of miles. Just wait. Hello, Professor Jamie Matthews. I hope they extend your Juno or your MOST telescope. Well, crossing our fingers anyway. Juno will appear hundreds of miles downward into the atmosphere with its microwave radiometer, which passively senses heat coming from within the planet. This capability will enable Juno to reveal the deep structure of the Great Red Spot, along with other prominent Jovian features, such as the colorful cloud bands. Okay, so today we talked about the Jovian system or Jupiter. So the Juno spacecraft's now, it's going there now. It's doing its orbits, its first orbits. After that, it will stay in orbit for 20 months. But you know, NASA, they say 20 months, that could mean 20 years. They always seem to be extending their missions, which is a great thing. So thank you for listening. Next week, I might go down. I had an interview planned in Hanford, Washington. Scientists or astronomers will know that Hanford, Washington. They have the legal observatory. So what's the legal observatory? It's the observatory that was made famous last year with the discovery, or was it this year, of gravitational waves. So they might get a PhD for that. So I'm going to go down there. I have an interview on Tuesday there in Washington. I'm going to go on the bus, but I'm very tired. So I might extend the mission, or just like NASA does, put it off until next week. So I'm going to contact the people there. So I'm going to get a nice tour of the observatory, and I will be away for that week. So hopefully when I come back, I might extend my mission and I might go on a trip farther south. We'll see. But when I come back eventually, I'm going to have many hours of interviews I made with one of the head scientists there, Dr. Michael Landry. I've been in contact with him, and I will go down and he will turn me around the site. So thank you for listening. This is Marco. You've been listening to CITR 101.9. So when I get back, I'll tell you what I've been doing. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.